call the meeting in order. All please rise. Join me in the salute to our flag. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You may be seated. The deputy clerk will take the roll call.
Councilmember Watson.
Present.
Councilmember Olson.
Here.
Councilmember Ingram.
Present.
Councilmember Birch.
Here.
Councilmember Goodrich.
Here. Okay, we have Councilperson Hansen that's requested a absence. He's traveling, so I entertain a motion to accept that.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, moving second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries. And then Councilperson Mutchler has indicated he would be approximately 20 minutes late.
Yeah.
Alrighty. If you're really good, you could finish the whole meeting in time, and it would just be an empty building. And probably not.
But it would be funny.
It would be funny.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so public comment period. This is the period for time where people from the audience can come forward and speak to the council.
Mr. Mayor, I have a public comment. I got a phone call from Papa John Robinson today, and he requests to be excused from public comment tonight as he had a previous engagement.
Okay, well, I don't think we'll vote on that, but thank you. The audience's anticipation.
Certainly.
Anyone else?
I do gratitude. Yeah,
I mean, you cut off your
video. I'll give you my phone number.
Anyone else on public comment period? No? Okay, we'll move on from there. Okay, I'm going to close the regular council meeting, and I'm going to open the Traffic Benefit District Board at 6:01:44. And we have before you the Transportation Benefit District Consent Agenda. It shows the projects that are going to be on the TBD work list for the coming year. I entertain a motion to approve that consent, or look, if you want to pull something out and discuss it, you can.
Make a motion to approve consent.
Okay, it's been moved and
seconded.
All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed? Okay, the motion carries. I'll close the TBD board at 6:02:17. And then we'll reopen the regular council meeting. And then before you is the regular consent agenda for the city council business for this evening.
Move to approve the consent agenda as presented.
Second.
Okay, we move and seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed? Okay, motion carries. Great. Okay. Now, discussion only. Cindy, no, we're going to move this up. Or no, you want to do after annexation or before?
Oh, Wendy will do after the fire.
Okay, so next up item is discussion only, city annexation, Fire District 7. I was telling Greg, I'm glad he brought this sheet. You know, as we move closer, maybe we'll have to have a big board on it, because trying to explain this to a citizen, it's a complicated endeavor, and I'm glad you brought the sheet. So if anyone in the audience needs more of this sheet, because it's hard to understand until you see it. So I'll go to the city administrator.
Yeah, and as the mayor mentioned, we're just beginning the discussions with Fire District Number 7. We're not asking for any action from the city council at this point. The mayor and I are actually going to be meeting with some of the fire district commissioners here in the near future. So this is something that this is a discussion we're starting, and I anticipate it coming back to you sometime this year. For the most part, what we're really talking about is exploring the concept of possibly having the city limits annexed into Fire District Number 7. As you're aware, we contract with the fire district right now, and the way our contract is set up, we take our tax assessed valuation and their levy rate, and that's what the contract calls for us to pay. If we were to indeed annex into the fire district, the dollars would not change. That is, instead of taking the fire district levy times our tax assessed valuation for contract purposes, we would be part of the district. Our $1 billion of valuation would add to their $2.6 billion in valuation, and whatever their levy rate would be would simply be the charge directly to our citizens. So in the very, very first year, what ends up happening is mathematically, after the vote, there's two votes that will take place. The citizens of Ferndale will need to vote to see if they want to join the district. And the members and the citizens out in the district will need to vote to see if they want to allow the city in. So there's two votes that will happen simultaneously. Each one is just a 50% plus one vote, so there's no supermajority. The way it works is we pass an ordinance requesting that the votes be held. It goes to the fire district commissioners. If they agree, they pass it on to the county. The county holds the vote, and then we become part of the district. What becomes a little confusing is the taxes. And the main reason why this is in some ways preferable, and the example I'll use, and hopefully this will make sense, is Boeing. Back in the 70s and 80s, I remember some signs, you know, the last person to leave Seattle, please turn off lights, when Boeing had all their problems. Boeing was such a large employer, given the region, that when Boeing coughed, the region caught a cold. They just had a huge effect on the area. I use that example because, as I mentioned, our valuation is about $1 billion, a touch above $1 billion. The fire district has a $2.6 billion tax assessed valuation. So combined, it's actually $3.6 billion. What has happened up until now is, out at Cherry Point, which is arguably a large percentage of the fire district's tax assessed valuation, as the industries out at Cherry Point add new equipment and other capital improvements, they also retire old equipment and old capital improvements. So their tax assessed valuation kind of gyrates depending on the year, whether they took more off the books than they added, or maybe one of the industries did a little bit more than the others. But what the effect has been is that, again, using the Boeing example, in Fire District 7, when the tax assessed valuation out at Cherry Point fluctuated, they, the fire district commissioners, needed to get or wanted to get that 1% tax assessed valuation, property tax increase that everyone else is limited to. But when the valuation drops down, their levy rate has to go up to collect the same dollars or perhaps a little bit more. So we're sitting here, kind of our tax assessed valuation is just slowly chugging along as we're a steady growing city. But the fire district is seeing these gyrations where their levy rate goes up, and then it maybe goes down by a little bit, then goes up by a little bit. So we here in the city, according to our contract, we needed to take their tax levy amount, which, again, may have ticked up a little higher because the valuation in the district due to Cherry Point went down. The math then is applied to our tax assessed valuation. We don't get to change our taxes, our property taxes. We just live with the idea that a higher levy rate out in the district applied to our tax assessed valuation means a higher bill from year to year. The opposite could be true. And there were some years where out at Cherry Point, there was a large increase in the valuation, and so the levy rate in the district went down. That was applied to us, and we paid close to or perhaps a little bit less than what we did in the prior years. That hasn't happened very often. More often than not, especially in the last 5-10 years, we've seen that uptick in the levy rate out in the district. So the hope is that by us joining the district, the valuation changes out at Cherry Point become mathematically a much smaller percentage of the total valuation of the now enlarged district. So by adding $1 billion into their pool, they're hoping that the pool is big enough and deep enough to withstand those gyrations out at Cherry Point. So that's the math side of it and how it works. So in the first year, we would lower our levy by the amount that we paid them previously. The district would absorb us. They would charge in property taxes the same exact amount. So in the very, very first year, to the penny, no one's property taxes, because of this in itself, would change. Then the hope is, as time marches on, you've got the bigger pool, which moderates those changes to the tax levy, and so the citizens in Ferndale aren't faced with trying to come up with an ever-increasing dollar amount through the contract that was really brought about by the mathematics of the contract itself and the change in the tax assessed valuation. That's the math side. On the other side of it, the commissioners are, there's three fire district commissioners, and they're currently elected at large. They don't have districts. They aren't in wards. They're just elected throughout the whole district. It appears that historically, they've kind of geographically, one's been maybe around Ferndale, one up north, and one in the south, and things like that. But when we annex into the fire district, if we annex into the fire district, the citizens of Ferndale will not only be able to vote for fire district commissioners, they will be able to run for fire district commissioners. So there's that extra layer, perhaps, or the additional local control, or at least say, that the property owners and the voters in Ferndale might be able to exert upon District 7. So it enlarges the pool, both mathematically and also from a standpoint of elected officials. It will hopefully even out that gyration we've seen. And for us, and this goes back to the sheet, and I'll show on here, our levy rate is reduced, but we still have some levy room, if you will. Over on this sheet, if you look at the bottom right-hand side, it says max city levy before and max city levy afterwards. All cities in the state of Washington there's a maximum property tax levy that all cities fall under. For bigger cities, it's $3.60 if you have a fireman's pension. For cities our size, if we don't have a fireman's pension, we start off with $3.37.5 as the most we would ever be able to levy in the world. Then, depending on your individual configurations, if you're part of a library district, if you're part of a fire district, their levies come off yours. So you can see that says the max city levy before, we start off with our 3.375, we reduced it by the library. So as of today, the most we could ever levy is $2.87.5. We current levy $2.07. So right now we're using about 72% of our maximum levy authority. Afterwards, we take the $3.37, you reduce the 50 cents for the library maximum, you reduce it for the $1.50, that is the maximum the fire district could get, and you end up with $1.37.5. Our levy rate, because of the math, would drop from $2.07 down to 94 cents per thousand. So we would have an actual levy rate of 94.5 cents, a maximum of $1.37, and we'd be using about 69% of our capacity. So you can see that before and after, we still have on a percentage basis the same capacity remaining. So we should be able to continue to grow the city, but not be at the mathematical gyrations that are right now embedded into our contract.
Okay, I have Councilperson Ingram, Watson, and then Goodrich.
Good explanation. The thing that I like about this proposal is that it makes our job so much easier. Every year, we have to have a budget approved by this council and presented to the citizens in place by December 31st. We don't have a clue at that point in time what the fire district is going to charge us. So, like, a couple of years ago, we passed our budget. Then we got a bill from the fire district, which was some $65,000 more than we had anticipated. And that really shoots us in the pants, budget-wise. It's a scramble trying to find that money after we've already, you know, squeezed pretty tight to get every dollar we can. So this is going to make our job a lot easier and future council's jobs a lot easier. We won't have to worry about getting blindsided by the fire district for an outrageous amount of money because something that Cherry Point or ConocoPhillips did.
So. Yeah, you're aware here, that I think all the council members are aware that, you know, we levy dollars. So when we pass our budget, we tell the county for 2013, we asked the county, we wanted to get $2.2 million, a little over $2.2 million. That was our limit. So we tell the county that's how much we want. We want $2.2 million. They then, through the math of the tax assessed valuation, come up with they back into the levy rate. So we don't set a levy rate, we set a dollar amount. So you're right. Come budget time, we'll tell the county we want $1 million instead of a little more than $2.2 million. We want $1 million, and then they'll figure out what the levy rate is. We know we're going to get the money. And it does take away that January and perhaps even February surprise that we've had.
Yeah. Now, well said by Councilor Ingram, because it's all a shot, but I want to, for the audience and the council, I want to defend Fire District 7. I know that Chief Gary Russell gets as frustrated as the council does, constantly calls the Watkins County Assessor and says, what do you think it's going to be? What is it going to be? He has conversations with our treasurer going, boy, I think it's 2%, I think it's 3%, and then all of a sudden, bam, he's hit with a 6%. And so
he's
just frustrated. And so in the meeting in the committee, it's clear that the fire director said, we understand and we support this. I'm not so sure he's gotten complete commissioner buy-in, but I just want it said that, hey, it's not like the fire district, our local fire district's doing that.
That's absolutely correct. And I should have mentioned that because I know that full well, and I didn't want anybody to think that I was saying that the fire district was being the bad guy in this thing. It's not. It's completely out of their hands. They don't really have anything to do with it. But it's still a blindside hit to us.
Yes. Well said. Thank you, Councilperson Watson.
I'm just curious. How will an individual taxpayer's bill change? Well, how will it look different if we do this annexation? Is there going to be more money? I mean, are they going to pay more? Correct.
Well,
No.
Someday on a different assessment. The first year, no.
Yeah. The first year, they'll see an uptick on their property taxes going to the fire district, and a corresponding downtick on the taxes going to the city.
And the way it looks on the bill is you get a line item for every jurisdiction that's taxing you. So all the city taxpayers will see is one new line item for Whatcom County Fire District number 7. And they'll see the levy rate and how much they're charged that based on their specific assessed valuation. It's the same thing they would see if they went to the assessor's website and searched their property.
Okay. So they'll just see another line item there, but the bottom number shouldn't be changing.
Right now, they don't see a fire district number 7 charge in there. Okay. So that'll actually pop up as new, but ours will drop by the same dollar.
Okay. And I do support this as well. I'm hoping that the commissioners are willing to do it as well.
Thank you. Councilperson Goodrich?
My question is, why wouldn't we want to do this? I mean, is there, you say, the commissioners, they may not. What is the negative side of this that would keep them from wanting to do this?
It's a change.
Why we wouldn't want to do it they wouldn't want to do it? If little different rationale, and the rationale why we would want to do it is somewhat universal. I've worked in other cities where we also had contracts with fire districts. And for the most part, the rule kind of is, if your fire district has a higher assessed valuation than the city, and that is a dollar levied in the district brings in more money than a dollar levied in the city because the district's valuation is so much higher, then it's better to let the fire district charge that dollar because they will get more money for that dollar amount. But up against that is the idea of the alternative, and that is if you don't contract with a fire district, the alternative is form your own fire district, form your own fire department. And at some point in time, the charges to the fire district start reaching the level that you could probably have your own fire department. Now, it's individual choice. We happen to be very lucky by having District 7, who's, I think, probably one of the more premier fire districts in the state. I mean, this is a large district with a lot of capacity and a lot of equipment and well-trained, so we're very lucky that we have those services that we probably, at this point in time, could not duplicate dollar for dollar in the first year because we would have to figure out where we're going to put the equipment, a building, maybe not this one. And we'd have to get equipment, and we'd have to get personnel and get training. And it really does. Starting a fire department is not an endeavor you do on a lark.
No.
But the reason why we would want to go into the district is we're starting to get to that point where what we're paying the district is approaching what we would be able to do on our own. Now, why the district would want to do it is that right now, from an operational standpoint, they're already providing the services in the city. In fact, I bet you if you talk to most people in Ferndale, when you talk about fire protection, I don't know if everyone really understands that there's a fire district versus the city. They probably think of it as their fire department. They drive by the buildings, they see the equipment. For some people, they probably don't really appreciate the nuance of having a district versus a city. So operationally, the fire district commissioners, I'm hopeful that they'll be able to see that this is a natural kind of maturity in their operations, that they can provide similar services. There's already the idea that it's our fire department. And the idea of having the folks in the city be able to vote and perhaps even run for fire district commissioner could be seen as a positive because you're now pulling in the potential expertise of a large group of people. So from the fire district standpoint, yeah, there's going to be more people voting, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. They'll have a much bigger pie to divvy up, and I think they'll have a much more kind of stable and sustainable revenue source in the future. So I think there's a lot of good reasons for it to happen on both sides.
Councilperson Bursch?
Will this have any impact on the elimination whatsoever?
No, well, not that I'm aware of. Currently, my understanding is that the fire district currently contracts for fire protection services out of the casino. It's a separate contract, not unlike, well, maybe unlike, but not all that different from our contract. We contract for services, the Lummi Nation contracts for services. And my understanding is that they'll continue to do that. So it really shouldn't have much effect out there for the
I lines. Think it's just a contract for just the casino.
Just the casino.
And I believe that their contract is similar in that it's based on the value of
Yeah, they actually. They take the insured value of the casino and hotel and the whole establishment there, and as you would expect, those financial entities that finance large operations like this like to have fire insurance coverage. The idea of not having fire coverage on such a large proposition is untenable. So the Lummies need the protection.
It's a hotel too.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Right.
So it was in our discussion. It was how many times per week in terms of paramedics at the casino?
They're there almost every day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of bankruptcies.
Yeah. A lot of
No, I don't think that was it.
A lot of times, you know, the clientele, you know, they come in on the bus and they sit at the machines.
Clearly, the biggest customer for daily.
And it's a lot more EMS than it is fire. It's not like they don't have fire every day.
No.
It's almost exclusively centered on EMS.
But that is why we've got a 7-story ladder truck.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, any other questions by council? Welcome, Councilperson Mutchler.
Thank you. I just had one. When we negotiate the contract every few years, the rate we are paying is essentially what we would be paying if we were in the district, correct?
Yes.
Could the city make the case that we're closer, everything's closer, and we perhaps are less expensive? Could we conceivably negotiate a lower rate
to
stay outside?
We could argue that. In fact, we have argued that. The philosophy that we're running up with on the district, and I don't fault them for this, they don't want to have two services. They provide all of their fire and EMS services out in the district, and they provide those same services in the city. So they don't want to have folks say, if you live in the city, you get the same services but pay less than if you work. It's kind of an all-for-one and one-for-all idea. So they've been very uncomfortable with the idea of having any adjustment to the levy rate in and out.
Yeah. Councilperson Olson?
You mentioned earlier you started with they get to take things off the rolls and put things on the rolls.
Industries auditory point.
Yeah, that's a neat concept. Do we, or does somebody, the assessor's office, do they compare those with their insured for? Because I'm sure that's going to be two different figures. I mean, you mentioned insured.
That's a whole business.
I've never been involved in. I don't know how they go about this negotiation. My understanding is that it's at the local level. It's with the Whatcom County assessor and their employees and the industries. I believe it's a real local negotiation.
There's a local board called the Whatcom County Board of Equalization. So as soon as you get your property tax bill, there should be some information on it that says if you want to appeal this, you appeal it to the Board of Equalization. And so then you take your case to that board, and that's what the industries have been doing. They've been taking their lawyers to that board and making their argument, and the board has agreed with them. That's a little bit separate, obviously, than your question about the valuation process, which I don't know the detail on, but I assume it's based on comparables and those types of things.
It should be noted, let's not talk anything more about the fire chief, because he just arrived.
He's hiding in the bed. Don't be afraid. Come on.
Okay, any more questions from council?
Would Chief Russell want to say anything?
Well, I mean, we're going to go to the audience, so he's a member of the audience, so if he'd like to spring forward, he could. Councilperson Goodrich?
So, I would assume we're going to come through with a timeline of when, because don't we have to have a certain decision made by a date to get on the ballot?
Exactly. And as I mentioned at the very beginning, we're just starting the conversation. We've not sat down and made any decisions, nor have we drafted any ordinances or contemplated any votes from the council at this point in time. But eventually, yes, it'll need to go on the ballot. Now, if one nuance also is that chances are, if we do have a vote in the fall, be it this fall or next fall or whatever it might be, it takes a while for all of the annexation paperwork to kind of catch up with reality. If you remember, when we annexed up in Grandview, the timing was such that for the next year, we didn't get those revenues in our annexed area. We had to wait a whole another year for that to happen. I wouldn't be surprised if we do go forward with this with some sort of a fall vote, that it would not take effect the beginning of that next year. We would again need to go through one more cycle. So this is something that is long term. It's not something that's going to turn on a dime. There's a lot involved here, and that's why we just want to start the conversation now so we can kind of fluff it out both on with the district side as well as the city side so everyone understands it and is comfortable, and then we just kind of let the mechanism work.
Councilperson Metzler?
Yeah, it occurs to me that what is driving this, in short, is the unfortunate fact that because of assessments, we don't get their numbers till January. We just don't. That's how it is.
Yeah.
And so if we actually could get those in October, November, we just add to the budget. It's not a big deal. But because we can't, we don't. We always
Both us and the district are kind of waiting to see what the assessor numbers are gonna play out, and that makes things a little difficult, especially long term.
Councilperson Watson.
I think for me it's not just that we get the budget number late. I'd also like the citizens of Ferndale to be able to run for the board and to be able to have some kind of local control of the board as well. Because right now, I mean, their commissioners make their decisions, but you can live here and pay the bills, but nobody in Ferndale can be on that commission. And I would like some people in Ferndale to be on that commission.
Taxation without representation.
That's right.
Well, that's an
give me a teabag.
Okay, from the audience, would anyone like to come forward and speak on this issue? And you are a member of the audience, Chief Russell, by the way. Anyone like to speak or ask questions? Do you have questions? It's a complicated subject, lots of numbers. If you'd like to ask a question, you may. Chief Russell, would you like to come forward and say anything?
Well,
you have a serious look on your face.
I'm trying to late.
And you are?
My name is Gary Russell. I'm the chief of Whatcom County Fire District 7.
Thank you. Welcome.
And I'm sorry that I'm late, but I thought that they actually started at 7 o'clock, the meetings.
No, we changed to 6 o'clock because we have some elderly council members that need to get to
okay.
The they get crazy.
Well, I can understand that. I'm sure you kind of went over the history of everything. You know, there's been fire service in the Ferndale area since 1910. We've had five actual chiefs since 1910. We've had a long time, very lengthy continuity of leadership and everything else. And the city of Ferndale had a fire department, and then it went to townships, and townships evolved into the fire district in 1956. And from there, the city and the fire district actually ran a combined fire department. In fact, we were housed right here. This is the apparatus base. So in about 1978, the city of Ferndale dissolved their fire department. All responsibilities went to a simple contracting with the district. And that's how we've evolved to this almost 40 years of contracting. And during that period of time, it's really not taxation without representation, because the city council does have representation. It's just not a voting member, is all. They do have a liaison to the commission. We react to what, the city and what their, all of these citizens are our, I wouldn't say our wards, but they're our responsibility. Mm-hmm. And they have been for all of these years. So we've had this symbiotic relationship between the district and the city of Ferndale for many, many years. The city has no assets, no physical plants, no equipment, no personnel. Pay a simple contract fee, just like you would. They used to have ran their own garbage service. They don't do that anymore. They have SSC do their garbage and refuse pickup. It's really no different. We've evolved, we've matured both as a city, from a town actually to a city, and from the district to where we're at today. As of May 1st, we're going to have 43 career employees in the district and still 65 volunteers in our 72 square miles. So we run about 2,500 alarms a year, and 60% of those are inside the city of Ferndale. And kind of we always try to use Linden as a comparable because they're about same size population and everything else. Linden's fire department this year will cost about $1.9 million to run. City of Ferndale is just over 1.3 because we've consolidated these services and don't try to run two different organizations and everything. So it's been a very good financially feasible, and because of our tax base in the district, our goal is always to keep our tax rates low. Well, we've experienced about over a billion dollars of devaluation in the last 4 years within our district. We've gained about a little over $350 million in new construction, but the offset is $700 some million of devaluation. Well, that adjusts the tax rate. And that's real hard, and we would love to have our numbers in October, but the last tax appeal was dropped December 31st on our desk. We have no way to react to it. It's not the city's fault. It's not the district's fault. We try to react to these things as best as possible. We try to keep our rate low for all of our taxpayers in the district and in the city. That's why we have a combination system. We have many different components of staffing to keep our costs low and to handle all these calls. So that's kind of basically the history, but annexation is one option that state law allows for. To have a city annex into a district. And what we've been doing all these years is nothing different. I mean, the city's been paying the same levy rate for their valuation as the taxpayers in the district have been paying. So it's really, really no different. It's been simple. The city has no employees. They don't have to worry about any liability or legal cases. It's the districts. We buy all the equipment. We do that, and we have three elected commissioners, and their sole purpose is to provide life and safety, medical aid service. It's narrow focus. We don't have to worry about parks and police and everything else. In fact, the police department likes us because we don't compete with them. But anyway, that's basically where it's at, and there need to be a lot of discussions and talks about how this option is for the city and for the district, because I know that our board is open to any kind of discussions about improving or maintaining our service. So, but there will have to be a lot of discussions, just like you're saying, just to kind of figure things out and see what is the best and how it works out. In some cases, it's annexation. Some cases, it's just a simple contract, the way it has been. In fact, we kind of discussed this about 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. We talked about annexation. And at that time, the city said, no, if we can pay the bill, we'd just rather pay the bill. So that's where we're at today. And we've had there's some major challenges out there that is not the fault of the city or the district or the assessor or anybody else. We've experienced a lot of spikes and highs and lows here in the last few years, and we have no control over them, neither does the city. It's just like any taxpayer, you have the right to appeal your property taxes, but ours are big appeals usually. This last one will be $275 million plus another $35. It's about $300 and some million. So that's a huge amount. The city is just over $1 billion. So can you imagine a third of your valuation? So it's a good chunk of ours. And the city is a good partner. We've been a great partner with the city and the district, and we look forward to maintaining that in the future. And the service we provide inside the city with the staff stations that we have and everything else is the best way that we can do this for all of our citizens in the city and in the district. So we gain things from the city, you know, by the population being here, and the city gains from us. So it's been that give and take all these years. So.
Thank you. Any questions for our guests, Council? No, seeing none. Okay, anyone else from the audience? The confusing stuff, you have any questions? There's no dumb questions on this issue. We're going to the answers. So, no, seeing no one step forward. No. Okay.
All right, we'll move on, and we wanted to change the agenda, and we wanted to move up the ordinance on the Southwest Stormwater Pond. So, Wendy, welcome. It's your floor.
Good evening. As most of you know, last year the city, can you hear me? The city built the Southwest Regional Storm Pond down at Douglas to mitigate for the stormwater from the Main Street Project, Church Road, and a few other city projects, and then the private development areas that drain to either Main Street or Church Road within that basin. So before you, we basically have the ordinance that will go in place for those private development lots to be able to buy into the pond in lieu of doing stormwater mitigation on their own site. I made a few changes to the ordinance. One, since we last talked at council committee, one is on page 2. Realized that we didn't have anything in the ordinance that said when the fee would be due for the developer. So added that for section B, and that is at time of approval of either some kind of development or a permit. And then the other change was on page 3. I had a discussion with Mark, and he said that the interest that we would charge is so minimal that it's not worth even tracking. So we took that out.
Okay.
Are there any questions?
Questions of staff? Any questions from council?
That's great.
Good report. If they have no questions, that means you did a great job.
Yeah.
Okay, direction, council motion?
Move to approve this ordinance as presented.
Second.
Okay. For the discussion, seeing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries, 6-0.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Wendy.
Drive carefully.
Okay, next up is the public hearing on the 2016 comp plan. Welcome, Yori Burnett, Community Development Director.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Good evening, Council. The district has had 5 chiefs in 100 years. I think I'm the 5th community development director since 2000, so the longevity of my position is a little bit different.
Remember that.
We are overdue, I think.
You didn't buy a house, did you?
I don't know if that's a great thing to bring up.
Well, we could look at the other way, where I should serve for the next 90 years.
Yeah.
Keep that thought.
We have before you the 2016 Comprehensive Plan Update, the Public Participation Plan. We've gone over this in committee. As part of the 2016 Comp Plan Update, we're required to have a public participation plan where we talk about what we plan on looking at, and we also talk about how we expect to engage the community. So we list both of those things in this public participation plan. Everything is, of course, subject to change. This is intended to be a living document, so if we come up with a new idea, we can certainly add it. If we want to remove something else, we can do that. Also, the list of groups that we have that we will specifically contact, we can expand that as we want to. We've notified most or all of the groups that we've listed in there to attend tonight. I don't know how many of them can make it or how many of them, by them not being here, are saying that they agree with it. There's not too much, I think, to be opposed to at this point. So with that said, the Planning Commission has recommended approval. We have scheduled a public hearing for tonight, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Questions of staff, since this is a public hearing, no opinion. Pieces on how you're going to vote, but questions of staff on the technical nature. Councilperson Watson.
So did the county also have to do their own separate plan, or is this all going to come together as one county plan for public participation?
The county will have to have their own separate plan. They've shared with us their draft plan, and this is actually modeled off of that.
Okay.
They haven't yet adopted their plan, though.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions of staff? Okay. Seeing none, I'm going to move to the public hearing. And we're going to have 2 public hearings right in a row, so I'll read my public hearing speech, and you can retain it in your memory for the second public hearing, so I only have to read this once. A public hearing is a formal opportunity to give a testimony to the council for consideration in the decision-making process. Written comments may also be submitted to the city clerk prior to the beginning of the hearing. When the mayor calls your name, proceed as follows. Audience member who signed up prior to the beginning of the meeting will be called first to speak at the public hearing. If you're unable to sign up before the meeting, you'll be given an opportunity to address the council once you've got through all the speakers listed on the hearing sheets. Each speaker should state his or her name, address for the record, and will be given 3 minutes to address the council. When a large group of individuals supports the same position on an issue, we encourage the selection of one or two representatives to speak on behalf of the entire group. So do we have anyone signed up?
We do not.
I will open up the public hearing at 6:39:50 and turn the audience. Would anyone like to come forward and speak on this subject? Okay, it's an enthusiastic crowd. They're all rushing. None of them are coming forward, though, so we'll close the public hearing at 6:40:05. Okay, direction, advice from council. Councilperson Mutchler, first hand up.
Yeah, I move the adoption of the comp plan public participation update for 2016.
Do I have a second for that?
Second.
Okay, I have a second from Councilperson Watson. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, motion carries 6-0. Okay, moving right along in the agenda, the public hearing on the zero lot line.
So last year, the City Council and Planning Commission had a joint meeting talking about density. What are ways to increase the types of options in our residential housing stock and development, whether or not we wanted to adopt a minimum density requirement or whether we wanted to go and see whether or not there's low-hanging fruit that we could use to make our developments more efficient and get increases of density more organically. So I'd like to say that we came up with this idea, but in fact, this concept that you're going to consider tonight was proposed to the city by private interests behind me based upon a similar model in both the city of Linden and the city of Bellingham. What's proposed is, through our subdivision process, an allowance to create zero lot line single family residences as an alternative to duplexes, where the duplex development where you have two units on the same lot would still be an option. But as proposed, what would be able to happen is you would have the same geographic space as would be in that lot, but you'd be able to create a property line down the middle and have one unit on one side of the property line and another unit in the other. Would look almost identical to a duplex, but would actually be able to provide that home ownership opportunity to folks that live there. Often what we hear about duplexes and what we see is they're renter occupied. Invariably, at least one of them is, and quite often two of them are. And you don't have that pride of ownership so much. Also, in this zero lot line concept, the idea is to be able to get people who are currently renting and enable them to actually make that investment and get into the housing market and be able to start going up that ladder, or perhaps to be able to purchase a piece of property or a style or value of home that you wouldn't otherwise be able to, where, for instance, for $300,000, you might not be able to afford a home in the city of Ferndale. But for $250,000, you might be able to, at that price point, get the same type of home as far as the style of home and the location as you otherwise would. We are proposing to take this through the subdivision process rather than have it be something that is allowed outright. And we want to do that for a couple of different reasons. Right now, in our single-family zones, and this would only be allowed in our single-family zones, a duplex can be approved through the conditional use process. It has to go through the hearing examiner and have a public hearing. We want to continue with that, where this would also have to have a public hearing. We also want to, again, take it through that subdivision process where, since this is really creating additional lots, we feel that it is much more appropriate than simply having it as an option in the normal zoning text. That allows the City Council, in most cases, to be able to see these projects as they come through, attach other conditions that they see fit, see what the hearing examiner placed on there, and see what the public hearing said. The Planning Commission was especially focused on the ramifications on existing neighborhoods. All of a sudden, you have the potential for, yes, more density in there. And would a neighbor have a opportunity to express their opinions? And we believe that, that we have allowed for that, and we, in fact, or the state allows for nearby residents within the existing subdivision to actually stop it. Again, through the public hearing process, neighbors are going to be able to say their two cents. But if there was a development within an existing subdivision where you had one or two lots that were vacant and you have a developer that wants to come in and put two of these single-family units in there, Planning Commission expressed some concern that that would not be in keeping with the nature of the subdivision. Even though a duplex might be allowed through zoning, there might be CC&Rs, covenants, codes, and restrictions that, that prevent it. So we did some research, and RCW 58.17 states that in an existing subdivision, when there is a proposal to increase the number of lots, the applicant needs to get acceptance basically from 50% or more, a majority of the existing property owners. We feel that this then, in combination with the rules that we're proposing, really puts neighbors in the driver's seat as far as being able to seek conditions or mitigation measures and really working with the applicant to create a good proposal. So the Planning Commission recommended approval unanimously. Staff recommends approval. We feel that we've worked very constructively with the applicant, and they've worked very constructively with us to take the original proposal and modify it so that it would work for the city.
Public hearing, technical questions to staff. Lots of questions. Okay, I'm going to go down in an even row. So I'm going to go Cuthbertson, Watson, Olson, Ingram, Mutchler, Birch, Goodrich. Let's all talk. So it's your turn.
How does this affect existing duplexes? And if you had a big enough lot, could you put a triplex using this?
The way that it would affect existing duplexes, possibly not at all. In most cases, not at all. This is the duplex scenarios are still just as viable as they were before. But if a property owner wished to convert a duplex into a single-family attached and subdivide, they could go through that process, through the subdivision process. Okay. The biggest obstacle would probably be structural, because a single-family attached is actually two separate structures that share a common wall, and they have fire separation and a variety of other things, whereas a duplex is just one structure.
Okay.
Not all duplexes structurally would be able to do that, and the expense to convert might be different. Triplexes would not be allowed. We included in the proposal a definition that states that single-family attached duplexes means a development of up to two single-family residences on separate lots. As I'm referring to this, incidentally, I am at section 18.08.260, the Z definitions. Do want to point out, you all have a hard copy of this. The one change that has occurred is on page 3, which is 17.28.030B4. It's not changing the proposal whatsoever. It's just clarifying what would otherwise be an inconsistency. Because we would allow subdivision creating smaller lots than would otherwise be allowed in the zoning code, we're stating that the width of those lots needs to be a certain width. That doesn't change. The change is, unless proposed as a single-family attached development, in which case 17.28.036A sub 6 FMC shall apply. Just a clarification.
Councilperson Olson?
You mentioned a firewall, but that's not going to be a concrete wall or something. How are you going to determine, if say I bought one side and you bought the other and you just let your side go, and we have trouble now with neighbors that don't take care of their own spots. Are these actually going to be two? How do you determine, if somebody's not taking care of their side, we get it to actually physically attached to somebody else's?
Mm-hmm. Excellent question. And I talked to the city of Bellingham at length about that. In their experience, it has been very successful by attaching through the subdivision process. I don't know if I want to call them covenants, codes, and restrictions, but legally binding agreements between the two owners as far as shared upkeep and maintenance of the common lot line, the exterior and common wall structural maintenance, painting and colors, reconstruction of the unit due to fire or natural hazard damage. And I asked them, well, you know, that's great, you know, that you have all of that, but is it successful? And they said that it is actually very successful, where it's a civil issue. And civilly, the interaction between the two property owners doesn't involve the city. And, in fact, operationally, it will not involve the city, where the two property owners agree or agree to disagree, and then they have their lawyers fight about it. It really doesn't involve the city whatsoever.
But we've just passed some things that you're more or less nuisancing. We're going to go after you. So how is that not going to involve us?
We have the ability to, if it gets to that issue where it is
exterior.
If it's exterior, if it's noticeable, we'll be able to get to it. You know, if someone wants to paint theirs pink and the other one wants to paint it yellow, right. You know, we don't care. But as far as the nuisance, we would then be able to then step in. It's
so you still do have that option.
Oh, absolutely, we would still have that option.
That terminology is public nuisance.
Public nuisance, exactly.
There's a difference.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what? Well, I'm not talking about the interior.
I know the exterior is a nuisance to the public.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and then what we would most likely do is if it was a shared element, they would both get that notice of violation. If it's clearly this person or that person, we would send it to them, which I have to say would be an extreme benefit. If we're dealing with property owners, rather than a property owner down in Bothell and a renter here that's done it, dealing with the property owners, we're at least dealing with the person responsible.
Okay, thanks. Councilperson Ingram is next.
Maybe I missed it in here. I don't know, Yori, but these can essentially be built with zero setback and still not actually have a common wall.
They would need to share a common wall or element. You know, what they can sometimes do is have a shared garage or a breezeway or something.
So what are we going to do with our building codes to address fire safety?
The building codes are built to take this into account, the same as townhouses. If you look at the townhouses that DJ Van Weerthuizen has done, if you look at the townhouses that Ron York has done, they have that common wall anyway in between them. And so we've processed, 50 of them over the last couple of years, so we don't think that that's going to be an issue.
Councilperson Metzler?
I know we're voting on this irrespective of the applicant, but I want to use him as an example. So after this, assuming passage of this ordinance, he would then still have to go before the hearings examiner, and he would still have to, there would be notification because it's a residential zone. Is that my understanding? How does the 50% work? Or let me rephrase it this way. How does the community participate in expressing their offenses? Just the hearings examiner at this point for him?
For him,
that particular example.
For him, this particular project has already gone through the hearing examiner for duplexes.
Yeah.
And it has received a conditional use approval. It's gone through the city council for the preliminary plat for 10 lots. The environmental impacts of that many units have already been looked at. What would most likely happen, and we have not asked our city attorney this specifically, but would most likely happen is the next stage would be the applicant would file a final plat with the city. We would then look at it and confirm that the infrastructure is in place, that all of that, and then it would come to the city council where you would give your blessing on it. Now, because it is proposing additional lot lines, it may be that the city attorney determines that the hearing examiner has to have a second hearing. And we have not asked that question.
Yeah, so he's sort of in a unique situation here. But in the future, When is the requirement that 50% of the property owners, is it in a new development, existing development? How does that?
In existing development.
Okay.
Where Pacific Highlands, if Pacific Highlands Phase 4, there's a couple of lots that are remaining.
And this is a standalone development, this chunk of land.
It is.
So it wouldn't have been needed anyway.
No.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Councilmember Bush?
The existing duplexes that are already out there, they were not built as dual homeowners, right?
Correct. Correct.
So this really doesn't apply to the existing duplexes.
In the vast majority of cases, it wouldn't. There might be some duplexes that might share a garage where it might be quite simple to go through this. And it would be the burden would be on the applicant to demonstrate that they could make it through that. This is really looking forward.
The existing ones are now owned by one owner, correct?
Yes.
What we're looking at now are two owner occupied dwellings.
Yes. Conceivably, that owner could say, you know what, I'm going to kick out my renters, and I'm going to apply for this to create the two. My understanding is that this is really going after a slightly different market. So it's not necessarily a competition with the existing duplexes. It's more the market in between the duplex and the single-family detached that this is going after.
So an existing duplex now that wants to pursue this route, how would they get that fire retardant wall in between the two units?
Most likely they would need a structural engineer to provide us with calculations and demonstrate to us how they could do it. And what's tough often is it's not just the wall that you can see, but it's all the way down the foundation and all the way up through the roof that you need to do. It might be cost prohibitive for them to do it. But there might be some where it is fairly easy. So we're not foreclosing on that possibility, but it's probably much less likely that those will be converted.
And the setbacks, it's going from 8 feet to 5 feet?
Yes, and so within a new subdivision, such as the one that we're discussing, the interior lines would be reduced from 8 feet down to 5 feet, which is 5 feet is standard in many jurisdictions. Whatcom County has a 5-foot setback. But on the periphery, where you're adjacent to an existing subdivision that is more of a traditional subdivision, they would have 8-foot setbacks. They would have the same setbacks between the new and the old as you would expect to see. So that, again, the impacts on the existing neighborhood as far as aesthetics, how far am I away from my neighbors, that would not change. The new has to conform to the old where they attach to one another.
Councilperson Goodrich?
My issue goes back that I brought up in committee and it didn't make it into the minutes was the issue of parking. Mm-hmm. You're increasing the density, but you're not dealing with the parking aspect. If this was a multifamily development, we would require additional parking spaces to be doing it, but here we're not. Like I said in the committee, I grew up in a place where they tore down single-family houses because they had nice big lots and put in multi-unit things, and now you can't find a place to park on the street anywhere because it's just wall-to-wall cars. It's not addressed. And so I'm concerned about increasing the density in those residential areas and ending up having areas where we just have wall-to-wall cars because we don't have any issues. You know, parking requirements other than what's provided on the property.
Absolutely. And you know, this is not specifically addressed in this new code section beyond the automatic requirement that they have to have two off-street parking spaces, not including the garage. So in other words, you'd have the garage, which, as we all know, is not usually used as a parking space, and then room for two cars within the driveway. But human nature or American nature is you tend to acquire as many vehicles as you can possibly store in or around your building. I don't know that this... I think that the alternative would be that we require that they have three off-street parking spaces or four off-street parking spaces or as you said, an off-street parking lot for them. But I think it's endemic more of residential in general and not just these units where perhaps at some point we, separate from this ordinance, we need to look at that and look at everything from our development standards for the road width to subdivisions in general to the number of parking spaces. I don't know that it necessarily relates to something that could be changed in this ordinance in the same manner as I don't think that this ordinance solves or creates the density objectives that we want to go. It might move us more in that direction.
But if you're building twice as many houses on the same area, you have the potential of twice as many vehicles. We don't have, it would be great if we had a rapid transit or a public transit system in our city, but we don't. So people are reliant on cars here. And if you have a teenager that's just all of a sudden now driving, which you potentially have, you know, younger, old, you know, families or whatever in here where you're going to have the multiple car issues, I can see just a parking nightmare.
Absolutely fair point. I don't know whether or not the applicant can address it. I don't have a solution for you at this time.
Okay, we'll refer that. The question will linger if we have people from the audience speak. Councilperson Olson?
I concur with Brent because that new fourplex that we did on 2nd Avenue down there, I think it's a fourplex, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
If you go by there at night, we were all told and bought off on that there's enough parking. No, there isn't, because people park along the what used to be the alleyway, I guess, there. So in back of those spaces that aren't marked for spaces. So that is not sufficient parking in there. And Brent brings up a very good point that if we're going, this should go hand in hand. If we're going to approve this, we should already have the answer to that. And for that reason, I won't support it. And I see the guy behind you is shaking his head. No, when you were talking about splitting an existing duplex. Did you have something that...
Just one second. No, I'm going to stop that right now. You just said an opinion. No opinions right now because we haven't opened the public hearing. We will open the public hearing and the audience will have the time to respond to questions as much as they can. We have not opened the public hearing, so you are in technical question phase, not in how I'm going to vote phase. That is after the public hearing.
Well, that's kind of correct, but we still don't have an answer to what he asked for.
Then
correct.
Then that's what's that? You staff provide an answer that he has an answer that he said he doesn't have a solution to it.
Now, oh, yeah, that's what I mean.
Yes, yeah. His answer was he didn't have an answer. Okay, so are we ready? Are we done with technical questions or opinions? And can we move to the public hearing? Okay. Mm-hmm. So at 7:03:05, I will open the public hearing. Now, do we have anyone signed up to speak? Okay, I'm sure we'll have people to speak. So we do. There they go. Okay, we have one person that signed up ahead of time, so this gentleman gets to go first. Ramon Manos, we can welcome you, sir. You're first. You signed up.
My name is Ramon Llanos. I'm part of the proponents, 7623 Melody Lane, Ferndale, Washington. As far as my shaking the head, the duplex has a shared wall. A sewer line has two walls with an air gap. So one wall, and they're also doing a two-hour wall, but it's two separate walls with an air gap. So they're totally separate units. As far as the parking, we have not increased the density because this plat has the density for 20 units or 10 duplexes. So the parking issue is there already. Not that I'm saying that's great or bad. We'll have to adjust to how much room we have on the subdivision, and you know, that's just nature is going to figure out how many cars you can get in that subdivision. I don't have a solution for the, you know, for the parking problem. The parking problem, this passes or doesn't pass, we're going to have 20 units in that, in this project. So I don't know if that helps on the wall.
Questions as guests, respectful dialogue back and forth. Councilperson Muxler.
Thank you for coming. My question is for you, but also for staff. If this ordinance does not pass tonight, mm-hmm. you will still build 10 duplexes, which will still have the same number of parking places and everything.
Exactly.
The only difference is you still have the same number of families and units. You're just not able to sell them individually.
Exactly.
So I'm unsure. Maybe staff can help out how voting this down changes the parking, solves a parking problem or not. That may well exist, but I don't know how that helps us.
In our development standards within subdivisions, we provide on-street parking. We say that people can park in the street because within subdivisions, we require eastbound and westbound, two lanes of travel, plus on the other side, parking. And so until or unless we want to make a decision that we're going to withdraw the allowance for parking in there, that's specifically in our development standards, it says they must create that, I don't know if it's 60-foot wide or 40-foot wide width, we are already saying that you will be able to park in the street because our development standards require that they install that parking on the street. That's really one of the reasons why I kind of unless we want to have that conversation saying that we don't want to do it, which would then change a lot of our other ordinances, basing on our development standards, we are already saying, yes, here's where you will have the overflow parking. And it says that really pretty black and white.
I may or may not share concerns that Brent and Keith have, but this ordinance doesn't appear to me to have anything to do with parking. That's a different discussion, is what I'm saying.
Well,
voting yes or no on this, I'm not sure how it affects parking one way or the other. It just limits the ability of this type of housing.
We shouldn't focus on the Second Avenue, because at Second Avenue, we as the council decided that was a main thoroughfare, and we eliminated, you know, there wasn't any on-street parking to start with. But there certainly isn't any on-street parking there. So you can't focus this general obligation based on one instance that we don't have on-street parking because it's a main thoroughfare. We made that choice as a council when we designed the roads for specifications. So this doesn't focus on just one development. This is all of Ferndale.
Correct. And I would say, though, that this does create the potential for increased density. You know, I think that is a fair point, that generally speaking, you could, as a result of this, have more density in there than you otherwise would have if it's popular. Let me explain what I mean. Right now, we could get the same number of duplexes as what's being proposed in here through a conditional use. We could get these densities that we're talking about anyway without any change. It's a question of whether or not this will be popular or not, where the densities would actually be realized or just theoretical, which is what we have with duplexes right now. But I would again go back to the development standards part of it, where we do require that they have the parking on the street as well as the two off-street parking.
Councilor Watson?
I have a question for
sure.
Ramon.
Sure.
I'm just curious why you want to do it this way as opposed to just putting duplexes in. What is your reasoning for doing it the way we're looking at this?
We're trying to provide a market. You know, you go from an apartment to a duplex. Not everybody can jump from a duplex rental mm-hmm. to a single-family house. Mm-hmm. Not everybody has $250,000 to $300,000. So we're trying to cover a market that works very well in Ferndale. I mean, in Linden, works very well in Bellingham. They don't have any problems. The market adjusts, and they figure a way to park. But we're just trying to cover a market that's not being tapped yet.
So you're giving people a chance, basically, to go from an apartment
house.
To get into their own home.
Exactly. And then from there, probably they're going to go to a single-family home after that, after they get tired of their neighbor or whatever.
But, okay.
But we're trying to create a market. It's a gamble. You know, I'm not sure if it's going to work. It's working in Linden. It's working in Bellingham.
Okay. Thank you, Ron.
Thank you. Okay, next up we had a hand up here. Welcome, sir.
Yep, thank you.
Come forward, name and address.
DJ Van Wertheisen, 7231 Secluded Lane, Ferndale, Washington. I'm the one that owns the fourplex on second. I just want to make it maybe clear for Keith. There are three off-site parking spots there.
And on the road?
Yes, off of Somerset.
Yeah.
And all three of those parking spots are used by neighbors across the street on the other side. And if you sit there at 5:30 and watch, you'll see they're not my tenants.
I don't think street parking is reserved for any particular...
That's correct. But my point is, my fourplex is not taking up those three spots.
Oh, I wasn't talking about those spots in the street. I'm talking about the parking lot that you have for your tenants. They're facing east-west.
Yes.
You have one or two people, depending on how late, weekends, whatever, that are parking behind those east-west facing north-south. Along, is there a fence there?
No, there's a row of trees.
A row of trees. Okay, yep. They're parking there, which to me indicates there's not enough parking for the people in there. That's what I was talking about.
I think they have parties.
Well, it goes to keep
in
point
Ferndale?
Being there's you are entering into you are entering into a discussion that is happening in every community in our area. Seattle went to a thing and said, hey, let's just not even have parking and let people just battle it out. Some people say that's the worst decision in the world. Some people say it forces you into mass transit. Customers at Goodrich clearly noted that, yes, we would all like everybody to use mass transit. We don't have a mass transit system. If you want to see probably the worst parking in Ferndale, go to Portaway Commons. A great self-help development, but you look and everyone is... No one uses their garage, someone mentioned that. And there are three-bedroom homes, and every home has five cars. I mean, just drive out there. You look and go, my gosh, does everyone... And then they have maybe a couple cars in the driveway they're remodeling. But it's where I'm going in that is drive all over Ferndale. As we have tried to make homes more affordable, we're squeezing those lots down. Nobody uses their garage for parking in a garage. We probably should just call it a storage thing. It's not a garage anymore.
Speak for yourself.
And the overflow goes to the street. And as we transition, someday will we have smaller cars? Maybe. You know, we're all supposed to be driving spaceships by now. But it's not Mr. DJ's problem. It's not Ramon's problem. It's a societal problem that I don't know if you can. You can move that because you're gonna move that affordability up, and I completely recognize what Ramon said is we're trying to get homeownership is important. Homeownership is important, and to be able to get that, but I don't have a solution for you.
I'm not saying it's his fault.
No, and that's what I'm trying to say.
I'm saying we did it and allowed it, and I'm not sure it's working. So I'm not blaming you. I mean, their tenants are going to do what they're going to do.
Well, and you look back in our history, and you're even before that, the city of Ferndale's had 2.5 spots per unit. One time we had three spots per unit. Then we went down to 1.5. We have struggled in history to say, what is the right spot per unit? And you don't have the answer. He doesn't have the answer. And Yori is, as much as we're paying, he doesn't seem to have the answer either.
Wait until he's here for 90 years. May I?
Yes.
May I just give everybody a quick educational moment here on how the duplex works and the zero lot line works? He did a pretty good job explaining it. When I've built many duplexes and fourplexes and triplexes all over this county. When we go in for our plan review, we have two choices. We could build as a apartment, multifamily, or we could build as a townhouse or condo structure. So on Willard Street, I have a triplex. I don't know, anybody know Willard Street? So I have a triplex there, and when I built that 8 years ago, I chose to build it as a townhouse style. Since I built that triplex, I have condominiumized it. So I can actually sell the triplex as each individual parcel numbers and structures. And maybe a lot of you didn't know that. But it's up to us as the builder or developer of how we want to build that structure. When I built Somerset, I mean Second and Somerset, I also built it as a townhouse style, so I can condominiumize it someday if I choose to. And I think I could do it without anybody's permission here. I think. I've done Willow Street without anybody's permission here. You guys didn't have to approve it.
There's a tape recorder on.
That's there you go. But I don't think it was required. I've done my parking. I've done my setbacks. I built the structure right. So I even just did a duplex on Somerset, and I built that also as a zero lot line. Mm-hmm. Now, the zoning won't allow that to happen there, and I never desired to do it. It was, at the time, the most efficient way to build it for fire. So many structures are out there right now in this city that's set up as a zero lot line. So separate walls, not a party wall, and a 3/4 inch air gap. So if you took a great big sawzall, you'd go right down it, and all you'd cut is your siding, and you could keep each unit completely independent from each other for fire or for lot line. Okay? Any other questions on clarification on that?
Questions for this guest? Thank you. Thank you for coming.
Yep. Thank you.
So anyone from the audience would like to come over and speak on this? Anyone else? Sir, welcome.
Hi, my name is Clyde Watkins, and my wife and I own the lot at Church in Maine. And I didn't know about, until 24 hours ago, that the stormwater thing was coming up. And then I, too, got confused and came late to the meeting. But that pushes me towards density, because it was bought for investment, and at some point, I hope, something will be built there. And on that parcel, that's $149,000 bill to hook up to stormwater. And I've emailed with Wendy today, and apparently if I built one house there on that oversized lot, it cost $149,000. I'd be required to pay that. We've talked, my wife and I, about, say, 8 lots or so. We wanted to keep that option open. I think this kind of starts to close the door. Our hand is kind of being forced toward a dense development. In the future, I really ask that if I'm back in about 2, 3, 4 years, hat in hand, asking your permission to put 96 houses there, oh, gosh, I hope we can do zero lot line. We have a lot of wetlands, and I hope that you're a little bit sympathetic when I come back and say, okay, Yori wins, Gary wins, the city wins. We're going dense. Yeah. Gosh. Anyway, I hope that it works out, and I think this may be a case of throwing, don't throw me in the briar patch. Maybe this is where, the payday is. And I certainly heartily endorse, and I hope that me being me that this doesn't kill it, but I really endorse the zero lot line concept. Go Gary, I hope it passes.
Thank you. That was a great one. Anyone else from the audience?
Okay, seeing none, close the public hearing at 7:19:19. Okay, direction from council. You bet. You can have all the questions you desire. Councilperson Olson, Mutchler, and Goodrich in line.
On the street issue, the streets are going to be wide enough for parking on both sides and for cars to travel together.
Yes. Yes.
Well, not all cases. You can't make that statement in all cases. This isn't an ordinance, just not for this subdivision.
No, but our development standards state that within subdivisions there shall be 15-foot route of travel one way, 15 feet another, and 10 feet for parking on either side. And I might have those numbers wrong. Yeah. But
don't paint your car on
new streets. There's an old street that was around for a long time. It may not meet that standard.
But if it was a new street in a new subdivision,
Nancy's talking about if you're doing an infill on a lot. I understand that. That would be you wouldn't have to just build a hole just for that section, right? Okay.
Councilperson Mutchler, then Goodrich.
Thank you. I have a property tax revenue question because it would seem to me that just use an example. Ramon is going to could put 10 duplexes in that are going to it's going to be 10 units that would be assessed by the assessor, or there could be 20 that basically be 20 parcels and 20 single family homes that happen to be connected. It just seemed to me because I think he expects he'd be able to sell those for more that the assessment could be more. On the latter case, and if it's a higher assessment, it's more revenue to the city. In other words, two separate homes, even though I have zero lot line, are going to assess more than one duplex. It would seem to me, and that would be more revenue to the city. Would that be incorrect to assume something like that?
I'm looking at
we can't guarantee that, but assessed valuation is supposed to be 100% of the fair market value. So theoretically, if they are being sold for a higher value and that is their fair market value, yes, we should collect more property taxes.
Because that's why they're doing this in the first place. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to make a motion that the council adopt the ordinance on zero lot lines for duplexes.
And here's the whole thing.
I second.
Okay, further discussion. Councilor Goodrich has his hand up, so we'll go to you first.
I'm going to end up voting for this, even though I have concerns about parking, and my request would be that we look at this more and get a better handle on this. If we're going to increase densities in areas, that we make sure that parking... I was just thinking of the fourplex that was just built over here across from the library, up the street from the library.
Yes.
Hamlin and things. You know, if we're going to start doing other things like this or issues like this, that we make sure that we don't end up with rows and rows of street parking.
Absolutely. Can I just follow up really quickly on that? I think as we start on that conversation, it would be very helpful to get from council a purpose statement that we can work off of. You know, what is council's goal here? And you might have said it more or less, but if we know what you're after, then I think that we can create something that fits it as long as life safety is taken into account.
Yeah, I just look at it from the point of view, you look at it, we're going to provide two off-street parking spots. But is two off-street parking spots realistic in our community without the transit system and things like that? It could be for even single-family homes or things, but especially in multifamily areas where we're trying to increase the density, is that really a realistic idea, or do we need to go to more off-street parking, which I know the developers don't want because now you have less place for your development. I would think the fire department, from a life safety issue, too, would rather not have a street, with cars down both sides of the street when they come rolling in either, aspect. So
that's allocate some time. That's a bigger issue. That's not an easy, quick, easy one.
How about next councilman?
how many citizens have you talked to that just love the size of the parking spaces at Ferndale Station?
Not when I take my truck in.
Yeah, when you start talking parking spaces, that's a tough one. Councilperson Olson and Ingram.
Well, now that it's been explained that we're sort of going to have the same streets, I mean, I don't see any reason to oppose a stricter parking if they're going to have the same as any other house. We're talking about on a duplex type thing, as opposed to fourplex. That's a different issue. So I'm assuming Ramon's is going to have two rows of cars that can park and two rows of traffic in and out.
Okay. 36 moonlight rows. They got 8 for parking and 4 travel lanes and 8. So that's okay. Standard for the city.
All right. Thank you.
Councilperson Ingram?
Well, you know, it's been said by other people, both up here and in the audience, about the parking issues. You come up to our area, I tell you what, you've got people parking on both sides of the street on a curve. Yeah, good luck with that, getting two cars past there. I see people diving for the ditch daily because here comes two cars, one going each way, and there's a car or a pickup truck parked here on a curve and a big SUV parked in the street on the other side of the curve, and you don't dare try and pass each other. You're going to leave paint on your door, I guarantee you. So that's a high-end development. And if we've got that same problem up there, and there's a building lot up there now that I've been watching for the last week where they've excavated out a pad and they're poured to concrete, and what it looks like they're building is a garage. It's a short driveway, two great big giant doors. If they're going to have a dwelling there, it's going to be above the garage because that's all, that's what they've poured. It's a garage. So that's going to be an interesting one to watch.
Yeah. Okay, further discussion by council. You have a motion before you and a second. Okay, seeing no further discussion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, motion carries 6-0. Okay, thank you, Ori. I know you worked hard on that. Thank you. Democracy at work. Okay, we're down to mayor comments. At the last council meeting, we had a citizen bring her daughter here with a request on stop signs. We don't always get to give immediate response to citizens, but thanks to our probation system, those stop signs are clean. And it was great because the mayor got to watch while one of the youngsters explained to his friend what he was doing, so if he ever did the stop sign again, it was going to be trouble. So maybe that's the system that should work. So we thank you. I had a meeting Friday that there's some members of the audience that came on this subject, and it's the Washington Conservation District. And the Washington Conservation District was formed by ex-Governor Dan Evans, a Republican, and ex-Governor Mike Lowry, a Democrat, with knowing that parks and recreation and trail funding is important in the future. And I didn't realize that part of the funding for our Riverwalk came from this through Whatcom County, through Ferndale. I had never known that. They met with us and said, Ferndale, you haven't submitted for a project in a long time, and we have money. But all of their projects are matching fund money with very little in terms of property acquisition. Last year they distributed $31 million, survived the budget. I guess it's one of those budget items that they've been told by the legislature, don't touch. This is for trail transportation type funding in terms of bike and walking paths. So we have money that we are projected for the next year and the year after that. Ferndale, you haven't participated, but it has to be matching funding.
What's the deadline?
Basically February, March of every year. But it has to be, and here I'm gonna pull a member of the Parks Board up to kind of speak on that, because it has to be matching funding, meaning, okay, you want to do a $500,000 project, great, Ferndale has to have $500,000, they give you $500,000 for that. Mark was very good as we attended the Parks Board. The Parks Board is an unbelievably great commission. But they're very frustrated is that you've heard me talk about this before. Ferndale did a wise and mature movement in the past where we borrowed money to build the Riverwalk and the fountain. Great. I don't think anyone from Ferndale would disagree with that. We had the opportunity from the railroad to offer land for Griffintown Park. Probably not the greatest time to build a park, but it was there, and the council was brave enough. Some could say brave. Some our distractors could say another term. But we borrowed money for that to basically build that. So now our parks mitigation funding to pay for those capital projects basically pays that debt, but we have nothing left over. I mean, we're running where there is nothing extra. And the Parks Board meets and tries to do a good job, looks at all the things in parks. And so I'd like to just take a couple minutes to bring the chairman of the Parks Board up, and he kind of explained their frustration because they look at our parks every year, and we have some parks we do a great job, but we focus on our larger parks, Pioneer Park, the ball fields take a lot of maintenance, so the Riverwalk takes a lot of maintenance. Those are our signature parks. And there are parks that we admittedly don't focus on. So, Chairman of the Parks Board, would you like to come forward? And can you take 3 minutes and kind of explain in your way where I'm going on this?
Sure. Robert Northhouse, I'm with the Park Board. I'm the chair, 6944 Dahlberg Road in Ferndale. Basically, what our meetings have been lately is we come up with really good ideas to improve the parks throughout Ferndale, but there's just, and we understand that there's just no money for it. Money's tight. It's always going to be tight. It's not going to get any better. But we also get a little frustrated that it never moves forward. And just like Mayor Jensen said, a lot of the efforts and maintenance goes into Pioneer Park, the ball fields, and Griffintown, because they're all major entryways into the city. They get a lot of attention, where the other parks in town basically are completely ignored because there's just nothing left. We're in desperate need of a parks department. We're one of the few cities in this area that doesn't have one. And so the money just kind of trickles down to the parks after everyone else is done with what they need. And I think with a parks department, that will change, and a little more concentration on the parks would be given when a parks department is put through. Gary was talking about the grants. There's an RCO grant or a Washington Recreation grant that's available that I've been talking to Yori about. Those are all options for the park board to do if there is no department in the future. But for the most part, there really isn't much need for a parks board if there's nothing for us to work on. A lot of the parks here in town are in desperate need of help. The maintenance money there is just not available, and we know that. And that's where, as myself as chairman, I want to try to direct the park board into a different direction. If we can't use any money because no money is available, maybe our concentration should be to find money so it can be available. So, yes.
Councilor Stingram.
Well, the mayor can stop me if he doesn't want me to say anything about this.
Stop. Are you the mayor?
At committee last week, we had a very enlightening and encouraging discussion on forming a recreation and parks district. And I think that if we carry through with that, would probably somewhere in the tune of $600,000 a year help you out any?
Almost definitely.
Yeah, I thought so.
Anything would be great.
And that's if we do a district within the city limits. If we go school district boundaries, it will be considerably more.
Yeah, we discussed that at our last meeting. Mayor Jensen came in and talked to us in great length about how that would develop. And
I personally think right now that's pretty much the only option we've got. We don't have the sales tax revenue coming in yet that we've hoped for years.
Correct.
And so I can understand your frustration about there's just no darn money.
Correct.
Because there's just no darn money.
Yes.
After we pay the stuff we need to pay and have to pay and fund all the other stuff, it's gone.
Correct. And we see that. I mean, we understand that. We're not trying to be a board that says, hey, man, everything that we come up with is the best and we need money. We're not
What I would hope that you would do and the Parks Board would do, personally, from my standpoint, start putting together some ideas on how to campaign, if you will, and encourage the passage of a Parks and Recreation District. I'm being sneakered, but I'm obviously not the first person who said that.
No, great minds think alike. We're already ahead of that.
Okay.
Yeah, we're on that already.
All right.
Yeah.
I'll shut up now.
It's a good idea.
Yeah, thanks for all you do. I remember I got there in that little trail that we put together a year or so ago working with your Boy Scouts.
Yeah, that was great.
So we currently have a volunteer parks board, and you mentioned a parks department,
correct?
And which would be there'd be staff and so on. Would you prefer? I mean, let's say the city had to make a choice between hiring a parks director someday. That's going to be the cost of the city of maybe $80,000 to $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
Would you think that's better use of money or those resources going to the park? You know, it seems like you're getting a lot done with a volunteer parks board.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a choice between Parks Department, it's going to cost the city, you know, a salary and benefits.
Correct.
Or that money going to the parks.
It's kind of a hand-in-hand sort of thing. You need one to get the other. So having just paying money for a parks commissioner or someone that's in charge of just the parks, you're still going to have the same problem. The money's still going to trickle down through public works, and it's still going to be whatever's left over is what's going to go for the park. You're just going to have a commissioner saying, you're not getting it, you're not getting it, but you might. So it's really not going to go anywhere unless you have a department where the money is going to be put in directly to a department, and then you're going to have a staff that's going to have, I mean, I've been thinking about this over the past few weeks, where you're going to have a hierarchy of staff. You know, you're going to have the recreational commissioner. You're going to have this director that's going to do the overall. You're going to have the maintenance director. You're going to have a certain level of people that's going to have to organize certain things. And that'll all have to come together a certain way. Whether I have the answer to that right now, I don't. But I'm thinking about it. I've been building on it.
Cusper Swanson?
There are three openings on the board at this time, is that correct?
Correct.
Yes.
Okay. And people who want to be on the board, for the record? Yes,
we already have some outstanding people that have taken blank applications.
Okay.
They're sitting right in the audience.
Yes.
Outstanding people that have said to come forward.
Yeah, we have...
He's running for the parks board,
so
apparently.
This was just the start of the discussion. You know, I wanted Rob to speak. I asked him to speak just because I've never seen him in long pants.
TMI, dude. Wow.
But it was neat. Friday is talking to these people is they reached out to us to say, you know, Ferndale, we're pleased about the project we've done in the past. The lady there said, I'd never, after we'd given you money, I'd never been up to look at the Riverwalk that we gave you. And that'd be great if it was longer. It's like, yeah, you're not the first person that suggested that. But when we sat down and told her what we've done as a city in terms of our developers, where developers can spend their own money to help us, and she came in and she said, gosh, I'm really impressed with what Ferndale's done. You just need a little more money to make it better. You should be proud of what you've done, but you need to do a little bit better. And, you know, we talked about Ferndale. We looked at other areas of Ferndale, the bridge across, the trail around the golf courses. You are poised to do some great things. Now you got to figure out how to do it. So we'll discuss that later, how we're going to do it. Councilperson Goodrich?
Just a question, and Mr. Young probably answered that. If we were to do a parks district, it would be the same thing idea as the fire district. It'd have to go out to a vote of the people and all the same whatever.
We can't forget ourselves.
Yes.
Think transportation benefit district.
Speaking of parks, have we gotten the graffiti off of our statues?
Yes.
The concrete
uprights, yes. They're all...
Oh, at the Riverwalk?
Yes. I don't know if it was chalk or paint or what, but there's blue crap.
Oh, okay. I still have, in my office, I have some more graffiti equipment from my two little, shall we say, volunteers. Councilperson Ingram.
I have a 5-gallon can of graffiti coat in my truck.
I'm not ready to paint those sculptures with it.
No, it's clear.
Oh, okay.
It's clear. It has to be, you have to have 2 days of, this is not going to be done quick, but you have to have 2 days of 55 degree temperature and no rain for 3 days so the material can dry out. But then you just take this stuff and you spray it on.
Well, bring it down.
I can bring it down and give it to Bo. Or whatever.
Great.
But yeah, you just spray that stuff on, and you wait a day, spray a second coat on, and then anything they paint on it,
spray it off with water and it goes away.
Okay, great. Okay, thanks, Bob. Thanks
yeah.
for coming in.
One thing I wanted to get out there, too, is that we do have plans for a star park next to Pioneer Park, and I have drawings, I have pictures, all that kind of thing can go to encourage Ferndale and the surrounding district to get this.
The state loved that idea as long as there's a trail connected to it. I guess just the old
right. And then the levy or whatever that we were talking about for the future park board, too, park department. It all kind of works together. So if you need help with that, I'm always around.
Okay, too. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, that's it for Mayor Report. Customers Goodrich, did you have a council resolution you wanted to bring forward?
You are serious?
Certainly can.
Okay, we were discussing this before, but I was talking with the mayor about doing a resolution in support of the 12th man and the Seahawks, and that we as the city come forth with the resolution to go
Seahawks. I didn't see our 12th man picture on the TV or in the newspaper.
It was in the Herald.
It was on the.
Did it make the Herald?
Yeah.
It was on their Facebook, I think. Yeah.
Do I have a second for that resolution?
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? Not
the Hawks.
Person Watson. all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
So unanimous.
Motion carries. Any further council reports?
No.
Councilor Sanders.
This isn't a report. It's more of a complaint. This chair is not acceptable. I've been sitting in it for an hour and 40 minutes.
Duly noted.
We have been sitting in them for 6.5 years, and I guarantee you that complaint will get you absolutely nothing.
This chair is unsafe.
Oh, there you go. If it's
yeah, you got the rocking board.
That's probably because as a rookie council member, they gave you the worst one.
Okay.
Any more council reports?
January 25th, Day of Giving. I believe there's going to be a box at the City Hall to make a donation to the Ferndale.
It's warmer that day.
Yeah, make a donation to the Ferndale Food Bank. There'll be several places around town you can make your donation this Saturday.
Okay, great.
Ferndale Community Meal Saturday.
Okay.
There you go.
Any other council reports? Okay, moving on. Finance Director.
Just to quickly clarify, I passed out an amended budget amendment to council members and city clerk before the council meeting tonight. So when you voted on the consent agenda, you were voting on the updated new numbers.
Mm-hmm. And their committee motion recognized that too, that there was likely going to be a last potential.
They were all completely aware of that. They studied it in
work
detail.
The weekend, finished up 2013, put a ribbon on it. And, change
we're only drinking.
Both Saturday and Sunday his truck was in the parking lot. Thank you.
That's wrong.
And a late night parks meeting, so he was putting in lots of duty last week. City Administrator.
I'm all set.
Planning.
February 4th, 3 to 5 p.m. at the county courthouse is our next elected officials' growth management coordinating meeting, and I've sent you all an email.
At council chambers?
At county council chambers.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. It's conference room 513 at the county courthouse.
Oh, upstairs.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, room 513. Okay. Thank you. And then you want to announce a joint meeting now, just so they can put their thought process?
The 12th.
February 12th.
March.
The planning commission.
Was it February?
I believe it's February.
Oh.
Yeah. February 12th, the planning commission has invited you to attend the first joint meeting of the year where we're going to talk about non-conforming uses and our philosophy and our policy with those. And so we're going to send out a staff report. We really need the philosophy first before we write something out.
And that's 7, correct, at planning commission time?
And that is 7 p.m.
Where at?
Here.
Get here early because there won't be enough nice chairs.
Clerk's office. Clerk's office. Okay. Public Works.
Oh, that was me. Dan was talking to me.
Ding dong. He'll never stop. You just have to get used to talking with him talking.
Police department, save us from this.
As to Council Member Olson's observation, I was down at the River Walk. It appears to be commercially available child's sidewalk chalk.
Oh, good.
And it should wash off the drain if it performs as advertised.
Sometimes okay, motion to adjourn.
As long as it's not the time that the chamber...
Second, okay, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Okay, we are adjourned.